my next guest, mainly Marxist thinker Brian Roper, political historian based at Otago University, on the line from near there right now. Kia ora, Brian.
Kia ora, Brian. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Unfortunately, Delta is not only back, it never left, and it's now pretty much here to stay, isn't it, right?
It appears so. It looks like the government's given up the fight when it comes to its elimination strategy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened to go hard, go early, and going harder means that we can kind of lock down for a shorter period of time.
Well, we went hard. We went early. There was one case in the community. We shut down. But, you know, the first hint I got as a broadcaster following things that was when I interviewed the COVID modeller, Rodney Jones. It must have been about a week into that lockdown, initial lockdown around the nation, and Rodney was arguing that he thought the tail of Delta, we were flattening the curve, no problems there, but the tail would wag. And he didn't necessarily say it at the time, but it did make me wonder, will the tail's wag outlast this government's resolve to get rid of it? Which seems to be the case. But is that the fault of anyone other than Delta itself?
Well, the thing about wagging tails is that you can stand on them, and you can also tell dogs to stop misbehaving, and generally the tail stops wagging fairly quickly. Obviously I'm being a bit flippant. I mean, I'm sure that what their data was showing them was that it was going to have a small but long tail, and that it was going to be much more difficult to eliminate than the alpha variant. But really, what you see during this period, before I kind of get into that, could I just put a big thank you to everyone in Auckland in particular, and now more recently the Waikato, because, you know, there's a lot of heroism, you know, that gets talked about in terms of wars and so forth. But actually, I just think that the people of Auckland who have been abiding by all of these restrictions have been behaving in an extremely heroic manner, making sacrifices, some of them very large, some of them, you know, small but still significant. And, you know, people are being motivated about keeping themselves safe and their whānau safe and those, you know, those in their immediate vicinity safe, but also keeping people across Auckland safe, keeping people across the entire country safe. So, you know, I don't think there's been enough expressions of appreciation from those such as myself in particular down here in Dunedin in the South Island.
Expreciation. I'm sorry to interrupt, Brian, but I just can't let that beautiful word you just invented there, expreciation, go without
decided to tie itself unmarked. In a knot.
It's the kind of thing I do time. It's good to know other people do it too.
Yeah, no, but it's been really heroic, you know, and really impressive. And I think that, you know, historians, when they're looking back, will write, you know, they should be really singing the praises of all of those who have abided by these restrictions and lockdowns and have really made major sacrifices, you know, for the public good, for maintaining, you know, public health. You know, in contrast, of course, we've had a chorus of business opinion, business leaders, and the politicians who are most closely tied to New Zealand's major business lobby groups, obviously the National and ACT parties, going all out to scupper the government's elimination strategy. So really, I see the government caving not to COVID, but caving to business pressure and pressure from the centre right. I think that even though the tail was going to wag and it was going to be long, we're not really now going to know whether another 2 or 3 weeks in level 4 might have actually enabled the government to actually eliminate it this time around at least. And by eliminating it this time around, well, Auckland would now be in probably level 2, and we would be vaccinating in a situation where we weren't under the kind of pressure as a country that we are currently, essentially trying to erase, you know, the wave that is coming, the wave of infections that's coming.
Brian, during this whole period, I've reminded myself and reminded listeners, as I remind myself, that I am not exposed to any financial risk during this particular COVID lockdown, even the level two in Wellington, and the same for you. I'm the taxpayer pays my wages. And even in the worst of the lockdown, I was able to come into work. So that helped my mental health. It helped the mental health of my family as well. And I think maybe you have to put yourself in the shoes of somebody who either his business is threatened by this, maybe he's going to go out of business because of this, or is employed by somebody who might go out of business, before you jump to conclusions about who put who under pressure.
Yes, it's that's a fair and important point. And indeed, I don't know why I was thinking of Marx's phrase, social being determines consciousness. Consciousness doesn't determine social being. So, you know, if my social being was in a small business in Auckland that had been shut down for a long time and I was at risk of losing that business, what my thoughts and feelings about COVID would be very different than you know, the thoughts and feelings that I have, where I'm in a much more secure position than that. So, I mean, I know that there are a lot of particularly smaller business people, you know, people who own smaller businesses in Aotearoa who have been really struggling and really suffering. But I still feel that, you know, one needs to actually step back and be a bit more analytical about this. I mean, we've had John Key, we've had the National Party, we've had ACT, and we've had a chorus of business opinion advocating a vaccine-based strategy. So let's just pause for a moment and look at a country where this vaccine-based approach has been implemented from the outset, which is the United Kingdom. I mean, we had somebody from the Adam Smith Institute, which is this hardline neoliberal slash far-right think tank in the UK, featured on News Hub with no critical commentary whatsoever, saying that New Zealand's elimination strategy was a joke. Well, let's look at some facts to ascertain whether it is a joke or not. As I'm sure your listeners are aware, current death toll in the UK is 139,571. Now, that would be, allowing for the population difference, that would be equivalent to 10,384 deaths in Aotearoa, compared to the 28 deaths that we actually have so far. I don't think that's actually much of a joke. I think that's really impressive. Now, that's the difference between an elimination-based strategy and a vaccine-based strategy. And if we look at total cases, it's even more shocking. It's just gone over 8.8 million. Now, roughly, that would be, I've looked at the current populations of Aotearoa versus the UK, that would be roughly equivalent to 655,489 cases in Aotearoa compared to the 5,823 cases that we've had. And most of those cases have come in through managed isolation, where people have been returning to the country with COVID, etc. So there's a huge difference, if we look at the statistics, between the United Kingdom and here. And the other reason that it's important to look at the United Kingdom, of course, is that because they really mismanaged the pandemic so poorly that the United Kingdom and joined the United States as a super spreader on a global scale. I mean, not only was it irresponsible in terms of its global implications, but obviously, as I've just mentioned, in terms of those figures for people living in the UK as well. But also because the UK is ahead of where we're at in terms of vaccination, it's highlighting, you know, some of the limitations of a vaccine-based strategy. It's showing some of the weaknesses.
The success that New Zealand had in keeping the virus out worked and is the big difference and is the reason we only have 28 deaths, not 10,000, if we extrapolate from the rate of death in the UK to New Zealand. That's pre-Delta. Post-Delta, we struggled. Now, one of the reasons I had a very interesting conversation with a friend of mine who works in a call centre for the police, not the emergency one, the other non-emergency number. She was not surprised that the government pulled back from elimination because of the calls that she was starting to receive from people saying so-and-so is not following, so-and-so is breaking the rules, etc., etc. People were just struggling to follow the rules. They just couldn't anymore. They were running out of patience.
Yes, but I would actually like to take it back a step. I mean, where did Delta come from? I mean, what Delta arose because of the failure of some of the world's most powerful governments presiding over some of the most affluent societies in the world with highly advanced healthcare systems and actually failing to implement effective elimination strategies, which both Aotearoa and China showed were actually feasible. So as Susie Wells pointed out, this thing could have been killed at birth if there had been a global synchronized implementation of elimination strategies. So we're now talking about Delta, and we're talking about whether people are abiding by the restrictions or not because of the reckless irresponsibility of, among other governments, the Trump administration in the United States and the Boris Johnson government in the United Kingdom, which basically that failure to implement an elimination strategy meant that new variants were going to emerge, especially once the virus spread into the global south. Now, in terms of people abiding by the restrictions or not abiding by the restrictions, and given the very small number of cases in Auckland before the government moved from level 4 down to level 3, sure, there's no doubt, especially because this time around, these community cases have been highlighting the inequalities that exist within our society, you know, overcrowded and poor housing, poverty, drug and alcohol issues, and so on and so forth, that meant that it was going to be very, very difficult to eliminate the virus. But given the billions of dollars that the government has spent on the on its response to COVID, and given the relatively small number of cases that we were talking about before the decision was made to move from level 4 down to level 3, I believe that even factoring that in, it was actually the wrong call to make, and the level 4 lockdown should have been maintained for a bit longer.
A bit longer. How much longer? Yeah. I mean, how much before you decide that you're not getting sufficient compliance, that the lack of compliance means that you're not actually achieving what you're trying to achieve?
Oh, look, tremendously good point. People are much more prepared to abide by lockdowns and to abide by the restrictions when they can see that they're working. And clearly the level 4 lockdown was working. The level 3 lockdown is actually containing the spread, but it isn't working in the sense of actually eliminating the virus. So people are going, well, quite realistically, the government's given up on its elimination strategy. COVID is coming to a street, a suburb, a town, a city near you, right? So everybody should be getting vaccinated. I'm not at all being anti-vax here. And in fact, I think that's a whole other interesting story that we don't have time to talk about.
No.
You know, the role that the likes of Facebook have played in actually promoting this totally false disinformation about the risks of vaccination, because that gets a high response rate and a high hit rate. Active engagement, as the whistleblower recently pointed out, doesn't matter that it's completely false and damaging to public health. Oh dear, Brian, I just went off on a digression.
It's all right. I do it all the time, Brian. You and me. We've only got time. We're going to have to move on to the sampler before too long. And that means about 3 or 4 minutes. But I wanted to look back. Well, right now we're in the middle of almost in the storm. And we can't, it's not the eye of a storm. It's some kind of storm where you can't see more than 1 meter ahead of you. You can't really see back either at the moment. We've kind of forgotten what we were doing before. And we don't know what's going to happen next. But there is a chance that we will be able to vaccinate at sufficient rate to avoid the kind of wide-scale sickness and death that other nations have experienced. There's a chance. And if we do, we will look back maybe in time and see that what our government did still managed to save thousands of lives. Right, Brian? Even if they gave up sooner than you thought they should.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. I'm kind of looking at 28 deaths versus 10,384 deaths, that's New Zealand versus the UK, and thinking to myself, if John Key had been Prime Minister when the pandemic broke out, we'd probably be a lot closer to the 10,000 than the 28. You know, I think nonetheless, what does disturb me is the lack of any real commentary in the mainstream media that's critically evaluating, you know, what the government has been doing from the left rather than the centre or the right. And I look, for understandable reasons, the government's going hard sell on vaccination, because the higher the vaccination rate, what the data does show, and what the UK data does show, is that these vaccines have waning effectiveness even after 10 weeks at preventing people from catching the virus, you know, SARS-CoV-2, but they are very effective in terms of reducing hospitalisation and death rates, which is why people should get vaccinated.
One other thing that maybe you need to factor in, Brian, in terms of the elimination strategy and its costs, is the mental health cost in people who have been locked down. And you will know people who've struggled with their mental health because of what we've had to do, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I sort of started off by talking about how heroic people's efforts have been. I mean, this is people, you know, and it's been very tough. And I'm sure it's also generating all sorts of problems, you know, domestic violence and so forth, mental health issues, depression. Probably there's been a substantial rise in alcohol consumption in Auckland. I don't know, but it'd be interesting to see the stats on that. So, yes, these restrictions are not good. And it would be so nice not to be having them now, because globally there had been a responsible, there had been much more responsibility and an effective, you know, elimination strategy applied globally. I mean, the problem with the vax-based response is the declining effectiveness of these vaccines. It's still unclear how long immunity from having COVID will last. There's a new subvariant, AY4.2, which is emerging. It's a subvariant of Delta, which is emerging in the UK. I mean, there are, you know, even with 90% of the total population, eligible population, vaccinated, if that population is 12, age 12 and above, well, that's still only 76% of the general population. There are still people who are going to be dying. There are going to be people who are going to be getting hospitalized.
20 seconds, Brian, 20 seconds.
Tens of thousands of people in this country who are going to be catching COVID in the not too distant future. It would be so nice not to be having to talk about this, because the virus had been killed at birth with synchronized elimination strategies being implemented globally.
Brian, thank you so much for joining us again.
Cheers. Thanks, Brian.